Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano coming up on Inside Coverage. Full coverage of Wild Card Weekend. Charles Robinson is here. Ben Fox is here with the numbers. Which games are the best games? More importantly, which games have the best storylines? Might there be more coaching changes next week? We'll tell you what we think of Miami and Mike McDaniel. Inside Coverage, next. As somebody once said in a pretty good movie, although it was the third in a trilogy and the third one is never as good as the first two, is every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in. And with that, we pull you back into another edition of Inside Coverage here on Yahoo. Heading into Wild Card Weekend, the how and the why of any and everything you need to know about the National Football League. My name is Andrew Siciliano, and I promised, even though Charles Robinson and Ben Fox, gentlemen, hello to you both, were not here yesterday, I promised on yesterday's show that this would be a full Wild Card Weekend preview show. And then this morning, as I said, once when I think I'm out, they pull me back in. Guys, I'm on a plane. I'm coming back from Vegas to Southern California. And I'm like, I'm going to sleep. Early morning flight. I'm tired. I'm going to turn my phone off and not get Wi-Fi. I'm just going to close my eyes. Land at LA. Of course, wait 40 minutes for a gate. Turn my phone on when we hit the tarmac. And see, Rob, what do you know? Stephen Ross, Mr. Delayed Reaction. Mike McDaniel is out. I guess it's not a surprise. It is kind of a surprise. He had to wait till Wednesday, or no, what's today? Thursday to do it, though.
Well, it was the reverse Michael Corleone, right? Just when I thought I was in, they pushed me back out.
They pushed me back out. When I thought I kept my job.
Yeah, you thought you kept the door. Job. You had your press conference. Like, it was like, oh, we're moving forward. And then, no. John Harbaugh becomes available and we re-scramble everything and here we go.
Do you think that's what it truly is? Like, the simplest explanation is John Harbaugh's available, or is it more like, hey, we're interviewing GM candidates and we're asking them what they think of our coach, and now maybe after a couple of days we're like, maybe not.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly some of that. You don't know. I think maybe what's the full hand you're going to be dealt if you're Stephen Ross as you're coming down the stretch and you're making the decision on whether you're going to keep Mike McDaniel or not. You don't know what other head coaches are going to become available. You don't know what potential GM candidates are going to say to you regarding the process, what they feel like with Mike McDaniel. There were still talks that Ross had to have with Mike McDaniel. So I don't think all the information was necessarily on the table. But when you not only do it after John Harbaugh becomes available, and then a potential GM alignment candidate suddenly appears on your GM interview list and advances into, at least right now, what would be considered the final four. And everybody seemingly knows, like, look, John Harbaugh wants some juice in the front office. Like, he wasn't like it was awful in Baltimore with Eric DaCosta or Ozzie Newsome, but, you know, there were times where he felt like he wanted a little more influence on the personnel side of things and didn't necessarily always have it. It's interesting that the Miami Dolphins, having that GM position open, deciding to push Mike McDaniel out the door and then add a new GM candidate to the mix is certainly interesting.
I'll just add, again, we're in the off season, right? So there's not as much from a betting perspective for like next season necessarily, but you can always look a little bit with some of these coaches, right, at how they perform this season. The Dolphins had a win total of 8.5 that opened, pushed down to 7.5 from betting, and they still didn't get over that going 7-10. So a little disappointing there. And I think just from a competitive standpoint, it's probably not good when your offense looks just as good or better with Quinn Ewers as your starter than Tua. They just had some games early on, too, where they were somewhat non-competitive against not really great teams, right? Just looking at the schedule. No offense to the Browns, right? But that game losing 31-6, that's not great. The Ravens 28-6, a loss. Getting blown out by the Bengals 45-21 late. And then obviously the last week of the season, 38-10, even though they played okay in the first half against the Patriots. But ultimately, you feel like he's kind of, Mike McDaniel was kind of tied to Tua, obviously not all in his control with some concussions and everything that happened there, but he's just not the franchise quarterback. Remember when we were debating Tua against Justin Herbert and that whole debate and who was better and who should each team have picked? Like, things have played out in a certain way. You kind of just need a reset. You also probably aren't going to have Tyreek Hill, right, who got injured early in the season. So some things were out of his control, but ultimately it just seemed like a team that kind of had quit, then came back, and then still didn't really have a direction as we ended the season.
Also, yeah, I'm glad.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, my apologies. I should have mentioned, by the way, the GM candidate, Chad Alexander.
Yeah.
Okay, he's assistant GM out of the Los Angeles Chargers, obviously with Jim Harbaugh's staff there. So yeah, I should have. Sometimes I just presume people pay attention to football the way we do, and they know who I'm talking about.
Well, we're connected dots. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that would make sense. You also have to assume that John Harbaugh is going to want the Dolphins job, that he's already decided that, and that he doesn't want any of the other openings that undoubtedly could be his if the price is right. John Harbaugh is going to have his choice of job. Do all now seven other openings want John Harbaugh? I don't know, but the Dolphins won. Obviously, there's a connection there. Ben, I'm glad you brought up the whole losing to the Browns and losing to whomever. Beating teams with winning records was not Mike McDaniel's strong suit. He had 4 years there. His overall record, 35-33. Obviously, they didn't win a playoff game, even though they made the playoffs. No Dolphins coach has made and won a playoff game since... anybody? Dave Wannstedt with Jay Fiedler as his quarterback.
2002, 2001.
In the year 2000, it's been 25 years since the Dolphins won a playoff game. But against teams with winning records, Mike McDaniel, in his 4 years as head coach, won this many games. I'm holding up four fingers. Four wins against teams that entered the game with winning records. He was 4-17. The only team worse in the entire NFL in the last 4 years is the Carolina Panthers. They won three games against teams with winning records, and two of them were this year, the Green Bay Packers and the Los Angeles Rams. So Mike McDaniel, who is a brilliant offensive mind, and for the record, I hate describing coaches as a genius. Like, if I had a dollar for every time a writer or a broadcaster said, this guy's a genius, and I don't mean about McDaniel per se, I just mean coaches in general. There aren't that many geniuses coaching football, but Mike McDaniel is a very, very, very bright offensive mind. My question to you, C-Rob, is Mike McDaniel around the league viewed as a great OC, or is he viewed as a guy who is going to get another head coaching job? Because we already know that he's linked to the Lions job. And Brad Holmes flat out said today, when asked, why did you fire John Morton? He said, well, sometimes guys become available. All right. So Mike McDaniel in Detroit, sign me up for that offense, which already scores 30 points a game. But does the league think Mike McDaniel should be a head coach again somewhere else?
Look, I haven't done a poll of, 31 other ownership groups, but I don't get the sense, like, when I've reached out, as the list has grown and grown in terms of the numbers of individuals who have been fired, and I've asked, hey, tell me who you think's going to be back on the sideline in the head coaching position next year. The two most prominent names I have heard are John Harbaugh and Kevin Stefanski. Mike McDaniel has not been a name. Now, that said, I did have a conversation earlier today with a couple of people about Mike McDaniel. I said, where do you ultimately think this goes? And I think the feel is Detroit, that would be a gangbusters opportunity for him to go in with all the talent they have, as long as they can, I think, get the middle of the offensive line, settle down, get Sam Laporta back healthy. That's a team that could come out of the gate flying. And I'll say this about Mike McDaniel, that it's always intrigued me going all the way back to the San Francisco 49ers. He was such a superb run game generator there. The thought process that went into some of the designs that the San Francisco 49ers ran, he would bring some of these plans to Kyle Shanahan. I was told this straight out of the organization. He would bring some plans to Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan would be like, let me think about this a little bit, and go back and be like, this is brilliant. Like, this is they held him in such high esteem from that tactical standpoint. I think he'll go and land either back with the 49ers, you know, staff a la Robert Sala, and we could be talking about him very quickly again, or he'll go to a place like Detroit where there are a ton of offensive weapons and he'll have an ability to recraft and recreate himself in that scenario. I don't think long term, though, he's absolutely out of the picture. I don't believe that long term.
Yeah. I remember Andrew Hawkins, who's on ESPN now, the great Hawk, former NFL wide receiver for the Bengals and the Browns. Andrew Hawkins, bright guy himself, he's got an MBA from Columbia, said that Mike McDaniel is the single most brilliant, if you want to put it that way, but the single smartest coach he has ever, ever been coached by in his football career at any level. That he is that guy. Whether or not he's a head coach, whether or not there's an accountability issue in the locker room, as seemingly there was this year, whether or not you can manage the whole operation, I'm not sure. But yeah, have him calling plays somewhere, he automatically unlocks the talent that you do have. And in Miami, they had a lot of talent. Ben, you pointed out that Tyreek Hill got hurt. Obviously, that takes away their deep threat. But they got Waddle, they got Achan, they got weapons there. And he had Tua. He unlocked Tua there for a couple of years, and then it simply fell apart. All right, meantime in Florida, Todd Bowles said earlier this week, I'm keeping my job. He is, seemingly, because he's getting rid of all his assistants. I don't know, C-Rob, that I could remember a house cleaning like this. Yeah. They got, let me get the list right, looking off camera here. Thomas McGahee, who was special teams coordinator. Thad Lewis, the quarterback coach, former NFL quarterback with the Rams a little bit. He's been an assistant. He played quarterback at Duke. The D-line coach, Charlie Strong, as in the former Texas head coach, Charlie Strong. He's gone. Kevin Ross, the corners coach, gone. Tom Moore, the legend, 87 years old. Peyton Manning's former right-hand man, 62 years coaching. He's officially retiring. Nick Rapone is retiring as well. He's been coaching in the secondary. Man, they're cleaning house, not to mention offense coordinator Josh Grizzard. So Baker Mayfield will now have a different OC, I believe, in every single season since he got in the league in 2018. Now, that's a bit deceiving. Like, he had Kevin Stefanski as the play caller for two straight years in Cleveland, but, you know, Alex Van Pelt was the OC, and then whatever. But you get my point. It's more change for Baker, and Todd Bowles in a power play says, I ain't leaving, you're all leaving.
Yeah, I mean, it feels a little Philadelphia Eaglesy to me in terms of, like, the history of some Eagles head coaches where, you know, I think Doug Peterson had some changes on his staff, and then it got to the point where he said no. He was basically told, hey, look, you're going to walk into the owner's suite right now, and you're going to be told there's got to be some changes on your coaching staff, and whether you come out with a job or not is going to depend on how willing you are to ultimately make those changes. And Doug Peterson went in and said, nope, I'm good. I want to hear these coaches that you think I don't necessarily need to have on my staff next year. I disagree with that, and so I think I should just go my own way. I think this sort of feels a little bit like that, where Todd Bowles knew, okay, you know, I've had discussions with ownership here. I've had discussions with the front office. There's some clarity that this staff cannot remain in place going into 2026, and there's going to have to be some wholesale changes made. And we talked about it all season long, how much they missed Liam Cohen on offense. I mean, it was significant, even with the injuries. I mean, it was just staggering how different that team looked from a run perspective. I'll say this for Bowles. I mean, Dave Canales and then followed by Liam Cohen, two pretty good OC hires there. Now, you know, you miss on the third. So you got to clean it up. I think that's obviously the most important hire they're really going to make, considering they have to sign Baker Mayfield to another extension in either this offseason or the next. That's got to be a decision that's got to be made. I think these changes were not just Todd Bowles saying, hey, I'm going in and I'm cutting everybody. You know, I'm going to go in and with a combine and I'm going to chop down half the staff. I think he knew there were some guys that had to move out of those positions.
It's good to be in charge, right? It's not my fault. It's everyone else's fault on the staff. It's him. It's him. It's him. You know, ultimately, we'll see how it works out for the team and for Baker Mayfield. I think a lot of going back to, what was it, the Thursday night game, I believe, right, against the Falcons. The Falcons had, when they have 17 penalties, right? Like, there are just certain games, I think, that you point to, and whether, again, that was going to fall on on Todd Bowles or on some of the coaching staff. And ultimately, you know, since I am the sports betting analyst, I look at it through a betting lens. The Bucks finished as the worst team against the spread this year, 5-12. They lost their last 9 games against the spread, which is really difficult to do when basically the odds makers are lowering your power rating a bit, but clearly not enough to the market adjustment. And so they still kept losing against the spread. They didn't win too many games down the stretch either. Obviously, they won that Panthers game. Panthers covered in week 18, but they just didn't do enough for a team. You know, it's too bad Frank isn't on. I know he was very high in Vegas preseason on the Bucks. He was all in on the Bucks. So a small funeral for Frank's Bucks futures. But they just didn't get it done ultimately. And it was a team right early in midseason. It was like Baker Mayfield, MVP candidate. Remember, he was scrambling for all those yards, potentially some injuries with Baker. But that team just wasn't the same whenever I forget if they started 6-2, 7-2, somewhere in there. It looked like, okay, they're going to win the division again. We'll see when everyone is healthy, right? Mike Evans was out. Chris Godwin was out. Tristan Wirfs was out. When everyone comes back, it'll all be fine. And it kind of went the other way. And so ultimately, is that the locker room? Is that coaching? Something had to change because something was off from what you thought was going to be a potential NFC contender.
Yeah. And it didn't work. And they're looking at the Carolina Panthers with a losing record hosting a playoff game. And that can't sit well. They cannot sit well in Tampa. The Falcons, couldn't get their act together until December when it didn't matter. They were out of the gate. As you said, Baker's going to be the MVP. And then all of a sudden, tell me, Bryce Young and that defense, they're somehow in the playoffs? Yeah, they are. And you're at home and you had to sit there in week 18 like the Bengals a year ago and hope for somebody else to do your dirty work, and it didn't happen. And to clarify here for Baker, it's not a different OC every year. He only had one repeat, really. So in 18 as a rookie, it was Todd Haley, but Freddie Kitchens there was part of it as well. After Hugh Jackson got fired, Freddie took over. In 2019, Todd Monken was officially the OC, but Freddie Kitchens called plays. Alex Van Pelt in 20 and 21, but Stefanski called plays. In 2022, he went to Carolina. Ben McAdoo there, then they got blown up. Baker got cut. He came out to LA. Liam Cohen was the OC, but Sean called plays. 2023, went to Tampa. Dave Canales. 2024, Liam Cohen. He too left. And then 2025, Josh Grizzard. So every year, it's something different. And you see Byron Leftwich there before Baker got there in 2022, as the Bucks now go 5 straight with a different OC under Todd Bowles, which is just absolutely absurd. All right, as promised, there are games this weekend. Which coaches will get fired after this weekend? I'm kidding. Although we could do a show on that. We're not going to. Instead, as promised, a full wildcard weekend preview, all 6 games. That's next. All right, friends, let's do it. Welcome back inside coverage. Andrew Siciliano, Charles Robinson, and Ben Fox, our betting analyst here. Let's run through it. It's finally playoff time. We're down to the tournament with 14 teams, the 2-1 seeds, Denver in the American Football Conference, and in the NFC, Seattle. They get the weekend off. They are sitting on the couch, and we have 6 wildcard weekends. We're going to go in chronological, I guess, from when they're going to be played, opening up on Saturday through Monday night. So let's do it. Here we go, boys. You got the Rams and the Carolina Panthers opening up wildcard weekend on Saturday afternoon. The game's on Fox. Joe Davis, Greg Olson, Pam Oliver, Christina Pink on the broadcast. It is a Week 13 rematch. The Panthers, that was one of their rare wins against a team with a winning record. They stunned the Rams 31-28 in Carolina. For those who don't remember, the Panthers had a short week. They had played Monday night in San Francisco, looked really bad, took a red eye after that game, got home like noon on Monday or something ridiculous like that. And nobody expected them to do anything in this game. But they turned Matthew Stafford over 3 times. That's a season high for Stafford. Bryce Young threw a couple of touchdown passes, and the Panthers won the game. I mean, it was one of the more stunning outcomes of the entire season. The Rams are in the playoffs for the seventh time in 9 years. The Panthers win their division for the first time, guys, in a decade, and they go worst to first. They were bottom of the NFC South last year. They are in. They get a home playoff game. Everybody is happy here. The injuries are notable. Devontae Adams is back for the Rams. He didn't play down the stretch. Quinton Lake is back. They're all everything safety, nickel player. He can play backer. He's all over the field. And not only is he all over the field, he never comes off the field. Before he got injured, and he didn't play week 13, he had not missed a single defensive snap the entire season. He is a massive part of that Chris Shula defense. And one of the reasons, in my opinion, that defense down the stretch gave up way too many points. The last 6 weeks of the season, they were a different team without Quinton Lake back there. It is also notable that Kevin Dotson is out, so the big road grading right guard for Matthew Stafford is out. This honestly is just stop the run, in my opinion. Shut down Rico Dowdle and Chuba Hubbard and make Bryce Young beat you. I would be absolutely stunned, floored, blown away, shocked, whatever you want to say, if Sean McVay loses this game on the road again to Dave Canales and the Carolina Panthers, Charles. I cannot see a scenario. And I understand there's a Rams football over my shoulder, but I cannot see a scenario with that happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think the design for the Rams is going to be exactly what you said. I mean, they're going to dial in on that backfield of Kyren Williams and Rico Dowdle and Chuba Hubbard. And they're not going to make the mistake they made late in the fourth quarter, that, you know, 31-28 loss, which was to let Teteroa McMillan get behind them for a huge play, a 43-yard touchdown. You know, Bryce Young was okay in that game. He was opportunistic. You know, he protected the ball. Matt Stafford didn't. But I think this is, as you said, it's a different dynamic when the Rams are returning both Devontae Adams, who is just murderous in the red zone for them, and then also Quinton Lake is. I cannot underscore how important he has been for that defense. As you said, he doesn't come off the field. This was a guy who, had he not had the extension tucked under his arm that he now has, I believe he's going to be the number one free agent on the market, coming into March. That's how much teams covet what he can do on the field. He will be all over the place. You still back in. If you're Carolina, it's a step forward. I think we talked about this earlier in the week, where organizationally, Panthers feel good about this. Anytime you get a postseason game, you feel good about it. You've had your moments with Bryce Young to feel like, hey, this is workable. We've Derek Brown, Tet McMillan, we're adding now to this base, and this gives us something to advance off of. But the Rams are, they're still sitting there feeling like we absolutely botched it. We're still a Super Bowl quality team. We're as good as anybody. We're as good as the Seattle Seahawks. We just dropped some games down the stretch, particularly the OT game against Seattle that they really regret. And I don't want to say that they're on the warpath to come back out and prove what they are, but I will tell you, Sean McVay, talking to Sean McVay the last, 7, 10 days, he's saying that's not the team we are. What happened down the stretch, that is not who we are. And we're going to show that.
Yeah, I would start off just a good betting nugget for most of these games since 2004, because these games are all outdoors. The under 49-23. So if you just blindly bet the under, you're doing well. And when the total is 41 or above, which is 5 of these 6 games, the only one that's the exception is Steelers-Texans, 42-14 to the under, which is 75%. So again, a trend, it's 20 plus years. Who knows if it holds this year, but there is probably something to that. This is the biggest road favorite for the Rams. This line opened 10 up to 10.5, even got to 11 at some sports books. Back to 10.5 at most. And this basically would be the biggest NFL playoff road favorite in the Super Bowl era, which goes back to 1966. So we'll call that 60 years. No team has been a bigger road favorite. And to your guys' point, it's just any way you kind of slice it and look at it. The Rams are second in DVOA. The Panthers are 25th. The Rams on offense are just number one DVOA, number one passing EPA, number one rushing, number one yards per play. you get it. They're very good. Their defense is also very good. The Panthers, you know, Matthew Stafford, fourth in total QBR, Bryce Young, 22nd, Stafford, potential MVP. Bryce Young, we're not really sure still if he's the guy in Carolina. It's a little bit, I don't want to say it's varsity and JV, but it's a little bit of that where you have a Rams team that right now and for basically the second half of the season has been oddsmakers' number one power rated team, best team in the NFL. It's why their Super Bowl odds are about plus 425 at BetMGM. The Seahawks are plus 375, even though the Seahawks have a bye. So this is viewed as, right, the Rams are going to win this game. They'll move on. They'll probably be the Super Bowl favorite going into the next round. Now, again, this is why we play the games. They did lose that game a couple weeks ago to the Panthers. But it's also important to remember that they kind of dominated a lot of the game. I think they had here 7.4 yards per play. The Panthers were at like 5.8. They had a couple of those turnovers. Bryce Young, I think, had two touchdowns on fourth down. So it was kind of all of those things happen. And they only lost the game by 3 points. So all of those things kind of need to happen again for the Panthers. Now, there could be some weather concerns as well in this game. If it is a little colder, potentially some rain, some wind, that's something that could level the playing field. But it just seems like these are two teams on very different paths. And I think the Rams is a get right game for a bit. And to your point as well, Quentin Lake, there's some of those players, right? We saw it with the Ravens in week 18 with Kyle Hamilton, and that defense completely changed when he was off the field. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Quentin Lake, you guys would know that better than I would, is that level, but I think it is that same thing with like the Vikings and Harrison Smith. They're those guys that when they get off the field, it's a different defense. I just think the Rams will be focused here. I think they take care of business. And it's like you said, it's hard to see the Panthers winning this game. I think it's also hard to see the Panthers covering this game.
So, I think it matters, too, in their finale when you wipe the floor with Jacoby Brissett. You get six sacks from five different guys.
Yeah.
They needed that little piece of momentum up front. They got it. And I think that cannot be.
And it was close in the first half. I mean, they pulled away.
It was competitive.
Yeah, it was
competitive. Right.
So point differential, you guys love DVOA, nothing wrong with DVOA, certainly. Look at point differential as well. Carolina's negative 69, which is just bonkers. They were outscored by 69 points this year. Now, there have been teams with losing records to win playoff games. We've seen this before. It happened in the Beastquake game in 2010. Carolina Panthers did it themselves in 2014 when they beat Arizona. So it has been done before. I just want to put the point differential into perspective here. Negative 69, the Rams were plus 172 in point differential. So that's a 241-point swing in point differential. Rams were second to the NFL. The Seahawks were first at 191. The difference, and obviously the Seahawks are the one seed in the NFC. So the difference between the Seahawks point differential, best in the NFL, and the Panthers, worst in the playoffs, is 260. It's mind-blowing. And about the Rams losing home field, yeah, it's a big deal. But, and this is not out of the realm of possibility, if they win this game, the Packers beat the Bears. Mm-hmm. The Niners beat the Eagles. It's a three-team parlay. They're back at home next week, at least for the divisional round. So I'm telling you, there's a way to get back home this week, but they have to beat the Panthers to open up wild card weekend. All right, let's get to that Packers and Bears game because weather could be a factor there as well. The storm that looked to be maybe some rain and snow in the morning, that forecast has shifted a bit. This could be a snow game. I don't mean like a blizzard game, but there could be some snow falling during this game. It's a night game at Soldier Field. It's on Prime on Saturday evening. So Al Michaels, Kirk Herbstreit, Kaylee Hartung on the call. It is their third meeting in 6 weeks. They split home and home this year. It is the best rivalry in the NFL for my money. It is the 213th meeting of the Bears and the Packers. However, it's only the third time they've played in the postseason, which is, it's hard to wrap your head around. Even Ben Johnson said that today, that he was surprised when he heard that note. The last time they faced each other was the 2010 NFC Championship championship game. Jay Cutler got hurt. Todd Collins came in the game. He was angry. He had to play football that day. It showed. And Aaron Rodgers and the Packers won the game. They went to Dallas. They beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl. There are a lot of questions about Matt LaFleur, like what happens if they lose this game and it goes badly. Yeah. I think that's absurd, but he is heading into the final year of his contract, and he and Ed Polizzi have to sit down to the offseason. The offseason could be Monday, and figure out what that contract looks like moving forward. Green Bay dominated the time of possession, C-Rob, the last time they faced each other, but they lost because Caleb pulled another rabbit out of his hat in the fourth quarter and then eventually in overtime here. Again, it comes down to the run game. The Bears ran for about 140 yards a game in each of those two. They're going to have to run the football again. They maybe get Roma Dunze back. Josh Jacobs is back for the Packers. I'm leaning Bears here, but you can't have like 51% completion here for Caleb Williams. You can't. That's not going to work. You can't just rely on the fourth quarter. Run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, pull it out in the fourth quarter. I'm fascinated by this game, but I'm leaning Bears.
Especially if it's a weather game, you know, that's I think that there's no doubt that running has to matter. And, you know, look, if it eases up a bit, I will say this for the Bears in that offense. When you look at what Ben Johnson has done down the stretch, especially if he gets Roma Dunze back in the lineup, and I think he will, all of a sudden you're looking at Luther Burden as being a guy that has really blossomed the second half of the season. He gives them a lot of versatility, both run and pass. Colston Loveland has turned into like a matchup nightmare for the Bears. They love it. I mean, that guy his future in Chicago is going to be absolutely unbelievable. But then when I look at the Packers, they're just giving up massive chunks of yardage down the stretch in the season. The defense is getting gassed constantly. You lose four games to close it. You lose Micah Parsons to injury, which clearly has had a massive cascading effect on that defense. I just don't know if you're the Packers, what you're feeling good about going into this game. And by the way, I'm with you. I don't see Matt Eberflus getting fired if he loses this game. Matt LaFleur getting fired. That's a little Freudian one there. I don't see Matt LaFleur getting fired if they lose this game. But when I've made calls over the last like 24 to 48 hours and I'm talking about, you know, positions potentially being open, every time I left Green Bay off, and this is talking to like executives, other people that are kind of circulating in the coaching search market, they've brought up Green Bay. And
yep.
I don't think that just happens out of nowhere. And I've had it happen half a dozen times where they're like, well, what about Green Bay? And, you know, so I do think there is a level of pressure there for Matt Eberflus with the way things, Matt LaFleur. Man, I'm never going to, jeez.
It's in your head now.
It was so bad. It was so bad in Chicago. I just can't get it out. Like I need a surgical procedure to get Matt Eberflus out of my brain. And whenever I think about Green Bay games.
I'll say this, and I said this earlier today on the radio in Cleveland. If that happens and if there's a breakup in Green Bay, I will drive to Green Bay to pick up Matt LaFleur and drive him to Berea. Like we talk about, John Harbaugh is now at the top of the list. Kevin Stefanski on Monday was at the top of everybody's list. Matt LaFleur is going to jump up on that depth chart, the top of everybody's list as well, if he were to become available.
I would think so. I mean, I think he's a quality coach, and you look at his winning percentage, it's been excellent. And, you know, he's done this through some personnel questions. You know, you think about they have a lot of wide receivers that they all sort of look like each other, and you can't keep a number one on the field, can't develop a number one permanently. You lose Tucker Kraft to a knee earlier this season. And, you know, he also went through the transition from Aaron Rodgers to Jordan Love and was able to come out of it with a team that, I think, frankly, if Micah Parsons does not suffer a season-ending injury, we're having a completely different conversation on the Packers right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think I'm glad you brought up Tucker Kraft, because this is just – there's this Packers team, which is the seventh seed and rested everyone in a meaningless game because they didn't have anything to play for. And there's the Packers from earlier in the season with Tucker Kraft, with Micah Parsons, who were potentially the Super Bowl favorite and the highest power-rated team by odds makers in the NFL. And it just always shows over the course of the season, right? What did we also see with the Indianapolis Colts? they were very, you know, highly power rated up there, Super Bowl odds, make a big trade as well for Sauce Gardner. Like, it's a long season. And ultimately, it's a season of a lot of attrition as well. And for the Packers, you know, we'll talk about the Niners. They certainly have had plenty of injuries. The Packers have also had in just areas they can't afford to, right? Because they also traded Kenny Clark for Micah Parsons. So you kind of lose two players in a sense, right? You lose that interior run stuffer, and now you lose the edge rusher that you traded him for. And so we've seen that, you know, compound with the defense. Tucker Kraft, a nightmare match, a monster. Now he's out. And so you've seen both sides, kind of a weaker team from what they had earlier in the season. They are still right now favored in this game, which is interesting. They are a road favorite, a 1-point road favorite. This did open at some books, Bears minus one. It's now Packers minus one or 1.5. It could flip back and forth a bit. Total has come down a couple points from 46 down to 44.5. Betting public, a little bit on the Bears, though still somewhat early in the week. I think also interesting with some of these other games we'll discuss, right? The Bears did play. They had a little bit to play for potentially in you know, keeping that number two seed, but they played mostly everyone that last week, whereas the Packers had the opposite. They basically had a bye week for all their starters. So is that beneficial for health? Is that a rest versus rust? We'll kind of see what that is with two teams that, like we said, have just played each other a few times, you know, the third time in the past, what, 6 or 7 weeks. I actually didn't realize, looking at the stats, how efficient Jordan Love had been. He's second in EPA per play, third in success rate for this offense, third in QBR. The Packers are the number one team when running play action as well. So the offense has been good. It hasn't always, I think, accumulated in as many points as we feel like they should have. And ultimately, I think this game is going to come down to, can the Packers stop the Bears from running the ball? The Bears, yeah, number one in rushing success rate. They were able to run it in those previous games. And the Packers D is 28th in success rate against the run. So if it's that cold, snowy game ultimately, and there's some wind, maybe the Packers can't throw the ball the way they'd like to, are the Bears just going to line up, run the ball, and there's nothing the Packers can do about it? And even though you could argue, as I probably would, the Packers are a more talented team overall, maybe even with those injuries, the Bears just have that advantage that I'm not sure the Packers can stop right now.
Yeah, this is a great Saturday night game.
Andrew, you've been in Chicago. It's interesting because we don't really talk about this very much, but Chicago's, the excitement level over this team is, I mean, it's peaking. It has to mean something, right? That you're playing a home game in front of a crowd that's going to pack it in.
Packers.
And it's the Packers. Yes. Like, I this is maximum level. Like, that stadium is going to be completely packed. I absolutely believe that that's a real home field advantage in this game for the Bears. Mm-hmm. And yet when I hear people talk about this game, barely anybody brings it up outside of the weather. They don't talk about the actual the fan base and what, you know, the Green Bay Packers are going to have to deal with. This is going to be as fervent as I can't even remember. I tried to think, what's the last game like this in Chicago where I could remember it being on this level? And you'd have to go all the way back to maybe the Rex Grossman era when they made it to the Super Bowl and lost.
NFC, I was going to say, NFC Championship game against the Saints. I was in the stands that day, that night. It was freezing, froze my tail off. Couldn't get an Uber, couldn't get transportation out of there. I walked back to NBC Tower, believe it or not, up Lakeshore on the side. Yeah, after that game, I couldn't feel my feet. But that building was ridiculous. It's in the NFC Championship game. Obviously, you're going to the Super Bowl. They won. They beat Drew Brees and Sean Payton. It was awesome. But yeah, there is nothing like being in the stands when the home team wins a playoff game at the NFL. Like, it is a different kind of awesome. I'm glad you brought it up. And it's going to be great in Chicago, especially with this rivalry.
And you Sign have, just up. To add as well, Andrew, you have that introductory press conference, right? I love to beat Matt LaFleur twice a year. Yes. Like, there's some
and
bad
the cold
blood
handshakes
between these two
after
teams
both
as well.
Games yep. this year between these guys and everything on the line for the Packers, like we mentioned with LaFleur. It's great.
It's fun.
We're not trying to ignore the Bills and the Jaguars. We're going to get through this one a little more quickly here. Bills and the Jaguars, which is the first game up on Sunday morning. Bills-Jaguars officially a 1 p.m. Eastern kick, so a standard 1 o'clock kick on Sunday. The 6 seed visiting the three seed in the AFC with Nance and Romo and Tracy Wolfson on the call. So the Jaguars are the hottest team in the NFL. We don't talk about them. Small market, whatever. I don't care. That's not why. But they are. And they've won eight in a row. Fascinating stat here, or note about teams on an eight-game winning streak. So the last 13 teams to head to the playoffs on a winning streak of eight or more games have all failed to win the Super Bowl. Six of them failed to even win a playoff game, which is just, I don't know, interesting, confusing to me. It doesn't, peaking too early, it doesn't always convey when you start the playoffs. But the Jaguars are beating teams during this eight-game winning streak by like 19 points a game, or at least their overall point differential in the eight games would average out to about 19 points a game. It's an amazing quarterback battle. I mean, Josh Allen and Trevor Lawrence playing the best football of his career. Trevor is. I still think it comes down to the run game. Buffalo's got the most dynamic, the most explosive, the best run defense, or rather offense, in the entire NFL. But the Jaguars stop the run. They've got the best run defense in the NFL. So there's the real battle here, even though the quarterbacks are the shiny objects. And talk about coaches and pressure here. Again, I don't think Sean McDermott is win or out, but everybody will tell you that with Burrow and Lamar and Patrick Mahomes out, see, Rob, this is the easiest path to the Super Bowl for the Bills. I would counter with, this is maybe their worst team in years making it to the postseason. They're not a bad team. I mean, they run the ball very well. Like I said,
yeah,
they're a good team. But compared to the juggernaut Bills teams from years past that couldn't get by Mahomes, this is not them.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, they're definitely not the same. And, you know, in a weird way, when you talked about Jacksonville and the run they've been on, 9-1 since the bye, I think, you know, and the one loss was to a Houston Texans team that were like, oh, actually, they turned out to be a pretty good team.
Yeah, exactly.
And you look at, you know, you look at Trevor Lawrence. I think he's got 19 touchdowns in the last six games. They're on a heater, straight up. But I could see it be that feeling of when you peaked, who you peaked against. They feasted on a lot of bad teams down the stretch. And then conversely, I looked at the Bills and I said, yeah, a terrible game, you know, late against the Philadelphia Eagles. That 13-12 loss was just awful. But maybe it's good that you had that happen. You know, maybe that is that sort of wake you up moment down the stretch and you realize what the stakes are here. I don't like that Sean McDermott's 0-5 on the road. I don't like that John Harbaugh is now a name that gets mentioned, well, you know, with that Bills job if they happen to lose this game to Jacksonville. So I do think there's an element of pressure. I think, you know, look, running game's going to be important here, but I would flip it to the other end beyond Buffalo, and I would look at Jacksonville, and I'd say, how much does Trevor factor into the Jaguars' running game? Because at times this season, when he's used that element of his game, he has looked unstoppable as a player. That's the guy when we, you know, we've said it a few times over the course of the season. This is the Clemson Trevor Lawrence. This was the number one pick, the generational talent. He's accessing the lower half of his body in a way that hurts defenses. I think that could be maybe a wild card factor in this game that we're not necessarily considering. But this is going to be a lot of fun to watch. And I'm just curious. To me, this is a measuring stick moment for the Jaguars franchise. I think you've got to win this game when you've come in with this kind of momentum and you've made these strides with Trevor Lawrence.
And for the Bills, right? Because this game opened, Bills, a 1-point road favorite. This is down to pick at some books, could flip to Jacksonville as a favorite. Like, it is right there for the Bills in the bigger picture. You have the first time, you're right, you're in the playoffs, no Patrick Mahomes, no Joe Burrow, no Lamar Jackson. Now, yes, your team might not be as good, but you don't have kind of those dragon slayers there that you have to go against. So there is that opportunity. I think potentially as well, the winner of this game could represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. This, I've been saying, is kind of like March Madness when there's two, you know, mid-major teams that people like to bet on. They face each other in the first round and you wish you could bet on them in separate games, but they just happen to get matched up. Like, I think these are two very, very good teams. We're going to see this spread be close to that total of 51.5. It is the highest total on the board. 8 of the last 10 Bills playoff games have gone over the total, as you would kind of expect. Very good offense. Defense has let them down. Interesting as well, because the Bills, right, we're used to them winning the division. They get those home playoff games. Sean McDermott, 0-5 in the playoffs on the road. And so now they also have to start on the road. A little different for the Bills. Will that defense be able to hold up? I think the good thing for the Bills is that the Jaguars, since the Jacoby Myers trade, they are 31st in EPA per design rush and 31st in success rate. So they haven't been able to run the ball as well, even though they've passed the ball well. Their defense is pretty good. Their offense is pretty good. And the Bills, it's that same. Do you have that other target as well? If it's all Josh Allen, it's all James Cook running the ball, they don't have that number one, right? They don't have the DK Metcalf, the Justin Jefferson, the guy that is just, okay, it's about players, not plays. This guy can get it done. And so I think that's also the concern for the Bills. If the offense stalls a bit, the Jaguars do somehow get that run defense going, because the Bills rush defense is bad. Can they Very also bad. Control the clock, keep Josh Allen off the field, and win the game that way? And to your point, Andrew, Jacksonville did not allow a 75-yard rusher this season. So as well as the Bills have run the ball, and James Cook and that Bills offensive line from FTN Fantasy, they have the third best offensive line by their metric in the past 30 years. So a historically good offensive line, rushing attack against a really good rushing defense. That's going to be where this game is won.
Yeah, they're blowing people off the ball. James Cook is like getting 10 yards downfield before anyone's touching him. Not all the time, but some of the time, clearly. Interesting note, it's the first time we have seen the league's leading rusher, and James Cook won the rushing title, face the league's number one rush defense in the playoffs since Seattle had that rush defense and Adrian Peterson won the rushing title in 2015. So it's been a decade. Seattle won that
game. We don't need to talk about that game. So
okay. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. Josh Allen, you mentioned Sean McDermott's road record. Josh Allen, part of that. He is 0-4 on the road in the playoffs. 3 of those were at Kansas City, for the record. All right, coming up, there are still 3 more games. We will get to them, I promise. The game in Philly, the game in Foxborough, the game in Pittsburgh, coming up next on Inside Coverage. But wait, there's more. Welcome back to the Inside Coverage Wildcard Weekend Preview Show. Andrew Siciliano, Charles Robinson, and Ben Fox. Guys, let's get to the 4:30 Eastern time window on Sunday for the 49ers and the Eagles. This is the 6th seed visiting the 3 seed. It's a game on Fox with Burkhart and Brady and Aaron and Tom. It is a rematch of the 2022 NFC Championship game. Remember where all the Niners quarterbacks got hurt and they eventually changed the rules with the emergency quarterbacks and all that nonsense, when in reality, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch just mismanaged their quarterback roster and didn't have enough healthy quarterbacks. But that's just my 2 cents on all that. But they changed the rules for that game. The 49ers have never gone 1-and-done in the postseason under Kyle Shanahan. As a matter of fact, dating back to 2011, and this is just bonkers, the Niners, when they make the playoffs, get to the NFC Championship game. 7 consecutive playoff trips have gotten to at least the NFC Championship game. But the Eagles have never lost a home under Nick Sirianni. They're 5-0. This is a battle, in my eyes, of the overused running back. We talk so much about Saquon and how much they overused him potentially last year in that effort to get 2,000. Look, they got their ring out of it. Saquon, in the regular season last year, had 378 touches. This year, in the regular season, Christian McCaffrey has 413 touches, which is, I mean, wrap your head around that. But they're going to have to rely on him to win this game as well. And this story, really, to me, C. Rob, let's start with you, is the idea that the Eagles' offense is not good. It just, there's no metric other than, like, hey, Jalen Hurts threw for a career-high 25 touchdown passes this year. Yay. You wouldn't have known it, necessarily. They had the most 3-and-outs in the NFL. The most. Somehow, though, Robert Saleh, with all the pieces in pieces, has found a way to cobble together a defense. Right now, as we sit here Thursday afternoon, they don't have a healthy linebacker. Like, not one that started the season on their initial 53. They find a way. It is a banged-up defense against an offense that has done very little this year. But the game is in Philadelphia. And the shiny objects are the running backs and the quarterbacks. I totally get that. San Francisco clearly has the better offense here, with or without Trent Williams. Lane Johnson back on the practice field for the Eagles. Yeah, who knows? Here as we tape it on Thursday. I'm really torn on this game. I've gone back and forth 100 times.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, oddly enough, I actually think it's going to be a defensive coordinator game. One of these two guys, like Vic Fangio and Saleh, they both should get assistant coach of the year votes this year. I mean, they've done fantastic things for different reasons, obviously. I mean, Vic Fangio's taken all the assets that he's had in front of him. He's been exquisite. Robert Saleh's taken everything that hasn't been in front of him and been exquisite, and both put together very, very impressive defensive seasons. To me, what I think about, though, in this game, I feel like the 49ers, you got to have your – this is just me. It's my personal opinion. I think you have to have your full offensive suite of players. I think not having, Trent Williams not being on the field to me would be a massive problem in this game. I think Ricky Pearsall gives that offense more than people realize. I think particularly if he's fully healthy, he's able to find, you know, depth and space, and it opens things up for Christian McCaffrey. I think when he's not there, the load is so heavy on a George Kittle. If he is fully healthy, the load is so healthy on running back Christian McCaffrey. What I think of in this game, though, and what I think the 49ers have to worry about is I truly believe Fangio is kind of peaking right now as a defensive coordinator. You go back to week 17 when they played the Buffalo Bills. They held James Cook to 3.7 yards per carry, and he never got a run off longer than 10 yards. That to me is what you're trying to put together, I think, ultimately against the San Francisco 49ers. If you can replicate that against Christian McCaffrey, and as I said, Pearsall's not in the game. If Trent Williams isn't in the game, it just puts such a tremendous burden on Kittle and Brock Purdy and whoever else walks out there on that offense to ultimately come through. Philly's defense to me is so, so good. And I'm willing to look at this one and think eventually the 49ers break under injuries. And this is as real and as deeply talented a defense they could face this season.
Yeah, I think ultimately, right, styles make fights, especially in the postseason. It's who you draw. And I just don't think this is a good matchup for the 49ers. This open Eagles -3, -3.5. It's up to -5, even -5.5 at some books, some sharp action at 3.5 and 4. So respected bettors pushing that up. We've also seen the total drop 2 points from 46.5 down to 44.5. I think respecting, again, that Eagles defense, and potentially if the 49ers defense plays a little better, maybe, than it has in the past few weeks. But ultimately, there's just so much. There have been so many injuries for the Niners. At a certain point, it's that breaking point. And I think seeing, like you said, Andrew, Tatum Bethune out now, the backup for Fred Warner, you have those linebackers out. A good Eagles offense is going to find a way to attack that, as well as the fact the 49ers, they just don't get pressure on the quarterback. They have they had the fewest sacks per game, 1.2. I think they had 20 sacks all season by any playoff
Miles
team
Garrett
in NFL
had more
history.
Sacks. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't get pressure on the quarterback. They're 31st in pressure rate. They also don't blitz. They blitz at the 29th highest pressure rate. And they have 6 interceptions all season. So if you're not getting to the quarterback, and when you blitz, you also don't get to the quarterback, and you're not turning the ball over, that's not a good combination, especially with a lot of injuries on defense as they have it. So I think the Eagles will have enough probably to get this done. And the Eagles defense, like we said, is very, very strong. They have played really well. And unlike some past seasons where maybe the offense could carry the defense, this defense is capable of carrying the offense. I think also interesting, too, a little parallels to last season, right, with the, I always got to bring up the Vikings when I can, but that Vikings-Lions game, right, where you win, you get the number one seed, you lose, you have to, in this case, the Eagles at least get to stay at home, but you get bumped down. You have to play that first week. The Niners just had a really physical game against a really good Seattle Seahawks team. They didn't win a game that could have had a bye. They could have been at home potentially throughout the postseason and the Super Bowl. And so is there that also emotional letdown? They also have to travel west to east. Now you have to play a really good Eagles team in Philadelphia where they don't tend to lose a lot of games anyway. And is there that, there is that revenge factor, right, from that NFC Championship game a few seasons ago. But is there also that ghost of Christmas past from a couple of seasons ago and, mm-hmm. and what happened there and injuries and can we win there and all that? So I just don't think it's a good matchup for the 49ers. At full strength, I think I like the Niners over the Eagles, but absolutely. The Niners are very far from yeah, full strength right
very
now.
Far.
Yeah, and yeah. their flight will inevitably get delayed because no plane has ever landed on time nor taken off on time. The next will be the first from that airport in Philadelphia. So you have to factor that in there as well. To your point about the sacks, the Niners are the first team in NFL history to make the playoffs, you know, since 82 when we kept track of sacks with fewer than 20, with 20 or fewer sacks and fewer than 10 picks. Like, They just don't get to the quarterback and don't force turnovers, but they have found a way to win. But, you know, again, conversely, the Eagles, of the teams that made the playoffs, third fewest points scored. Only the Chargers and the Panthers have scored more points than the Eagles, and they have the most three and outs. I mean, their offense, you know, all the A.J. Brown drama, just look under the hood. He's right. It hasn't worked. And you want to talk about coaching changes, like if they lose, I mean, do they have to win the Super Bowl for Kevin Petullo to come back as offensive coordinator? Not that it's all his fault. Clearly, there's a lot going on there, but something else to look at. All right, two more games. Speaking of the Chargers are on the road at 8 o'clock. So this is the night game on Sunday Night Football here. Chargers Patriots, a 7-2 game in the AFC. Tarico Collinsworth and Melissa Stark on the call there. Jim Harbaugh and Mike Vrabel will meet for the first time as head coaches. Who knew that? All right, Patriot fans hate when I do this, but I'm going to have to do it because I do think it matters here. The Patriots have faced three teams with a winning record this year. Three. They are 1-2 in those three. Their big one was the Sunday night game over the Bills. They beat them in primetime week 5, but they lost to the Steelers week 3, and then they lost to the Bills in the rematch just a couple of weeks ago in week 15. Where the rest of my notes on this game? Here they are. Andrew, use page 2 of your printed notes. To me, this is, again, the Chargers' O-line. C-Rob is the story. 32 different O-line combinations crazy. This year. The reason, as I said last week, that Jim Harbaugh rested everybody in Week 18, seeding could have still very much been affected. It's that they feared for Justin Herbert's safety. Like, he might have died if they put him out there. Trevor Penning may have to play left tackle in this game. Trevor Penning's a former first-round pick, but there's a reason the Chargers got him for like a 6-pack of beer at the trade deadline, and you may have to start him at left tackle. He was like a rotational piece, a 6th offensive lineman after they made the deal. I don't know how Jim Harbaugh has cobbled this together this year, but he has. I just can't see him, unless Herbert plays superhero again, and we've seen it happen plenty of times. I don't know how they go on the road and win this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most remixed offensive line over the course of the season of probably any NFL team. I mean, it's just been absurd how like the positional fits have been off. Like you're sliding guys all over the place. You lose your two anchor tackles. Herbert suffers obviously the fractured non-throwing hand, which, you know, from what I understand, they're pleased with being able to sit him in that season finale. For the first time in a while, some of the swelling in that hand has kind of subsided and it feels much better. I think, you know, his grip is better now this week practicing. But, you know, to me, for the Chargers, I'm like, the way they win this game, I mean, the real Achilles, I think, for this Patriots team, they don't stop the run well. And, you know, if Omarion Hampton can come out and somehow have a great game, if Justin Herbert can access, you know, the lower half of his body and ultimately hurt the Patriots, you know, in that fashion, I think then potentially you turn this. The problem is Milton Williams returns for the New England Patriots in this game. It's a big deal. Milton Williams teams could not handle him, you know, early in this season before he missed a large swath of games. And then Will Campbell is another guy who's going to play on the offensive line for the New England Patriots. You can only beat the teams that you get put in front of you. I'm like you. I look at the schedule and I look at who they played. And, you know, they feasted on a very, very bad schedule this year. But they also would have had, a 14-game winning streak going into the playoffs if they didn't have that terrible second half against the Buffalo Bills in Week 15. I think there's a ton of momentum there. I think there's a lot to like about Drake May. And, I do think this is a very, very winnable game at home for the Patriots. But I think a lot of that has to do with, I just look at the Chargers offensive line, and I don't know how ultimately you're going to keep Justin Herbert protected enough to make the big plays that are going to be necessary to win this game.
Yeah, and of the opponents, right, for Patriots fans, potentially could have had the Texans and you could have had the Bills, right? So you get the Chargers. Yeah. That's as good as it gets.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So ultimately it works out. Patriots are 3.5-point favorite in this game. Not a ton of line movement, total at 45.5. The Patriots have been a very good team, to your point. With the schedule, though, they have played the third easiest schedule since 1978, according to FTN Fantasy. So it's not only been easy, it's also been historically easy. Now, that said, they've played well against the teams. They've blown out a lot of teams that they should. They've been good against the spread, too. And as C-Rob was saying, they are getting healthier. They got a chance to get Milton Williams in against the Dolphins in Week 18. I think Will Campbell played, I believe, at least a little bit. So get their feet wet, at least their first action back wasn't in the postseason. Their offense is number one in EPA per play overall and passing, but only 24th rushing. And I think that's a big thing. This Chargers defense is good both against the run and against the pass. If the Chargers are going to be able to win this game and keep it close, it's going to be because the Patriots aren't as efficient, aren't as good in the red zone. The Patriots, the best statistical offense in the league outside the red zone, they're only 17th in EPA in the red zone and 30th running the ball there. So can they convert? They're going to move the ball even against a good defense, but can they convert those into touchdowns? And I think ultimately, if as well, you know, Mike Vrabel is a smart coach. They have Ladd McConkey, right? He is the engine of that passing game. I'm assuming they're going to double him or take him away. Can Keenan Allen do enough? Can they do enough if they don't get enough from Ladd McConkey? We kind of saw this last year in that Texans playoff game where the Chargers started off well. I think there was one interception. Things kind of went downhill and they were able to kind of take Ladd McConkey out. If the Patriots can do the same thing, I just think they have a better team. They have the home field advantage, a good coach. This feels like whether or not the Patriots make a Super Bowl run is a different question, but I just think they're a better team right now. Again, the Chargers, full strength, Joe Alt, Rashawn Slater, different story. That's a 50-50
game. They might
game.
Be hosting this game.
Right. To me, this feels a little bit like, again, the 49ers. There's just too many injuries. Justin Herbert with the banged up hand as well. Now, he is good enough to carry them potentially to a win, but I think this spread's also a little light. I think the Patriots get this done.
Patriot fans, it's not a knock. You're a good team. You're a good team. Stop getting so angry when people point out that the schedule is easy. It's just a fact. Both can be true. The schedule's easy and you've played well. Both can be true. Looking ahead to next year, because yes, I've already done that. The easiest schedule, as of now on paper, not calculating in the playoffs or anything like that, just based on regular season records that just ended. The easiest schedule next year, drumroll. Anybody? Do you know?
Anybody? Cleveland Browns.
Bam!
Is it the Cleveland Browns? Interesting.
It is. Just throwing it out there. Think about it. Happy to play a last place schedule and the AFC South and the NFC South. Happy. I welcome it. All right. You mentioned the Chargers, how they started well last year, and then the wheels came off in the postseason, their wild card game. It was on the road. It was in Houston against the Texans. The Texans are on the road to close out wild card weekend. The weekend's going to extend to Monday. So the Monday night game here, the Texans and the Steelers, the 5 visiting the 4. This is a Monday night football game, so it's Joe Buck and Troy Aikman and Lisa Salters and Laura Rutledge on the call. The Texans won 12 games this year. They started 0-3. So just think about the heater that they have been on. After opening 0-3, they have won 12 of their last 14 games. Their defense is smoking, and their offense has figured it out under first-year coordinator Nick Cayley, who got his flowers today from C.J. Stroud when he was on the podium. He said that everyone wants to microwave things. He said really their offense is more of a crock pot, right? It's a slow cooker, and they've been slow cooking it. And that offense, I don't know that it's cooking, but it has finally found its footing, and it's complemented the defense because the defense is there. And regardless of how deep this playoff run goes, don't forget about the name Matt Burke, the D coordinator here under DeMeco Ryans. He is going to get some head coaching interviews, even though you haven't necessarily heard his name yet. As for the Steelers, talk about the storylines here. See, Rob, I found it very interesting, and we talked about it, Jory and I did yesterday, that Mike Tomlin went on Rich Eisen's show this week. Mike Tomlin doesn't do one-off standalone interviews. He just doesn't do it during the season. Came on with Rich, to Rich's credit. Mutual respect. Did Rich's show. And when given the opportunity to say, hey, I want to be here, I'm coming back, although he wasn't asked point blank, he didn't do it. Lot hanging over this game. Is it Aaron Rodgers' final game? Not only as a Steeler, but maybe ever. He's intimated he wants to keep on playing. Steeler fans hate when I bring this up. TJ Watt has never been on a team that has won a playoff game. Ever. They get in, they lose. Period. Great way to end the weekend.
Steelers fans aren't going to like to hear it either. You know, I think there are some networks out there that are very interested in offering Mike Tomlin a lot of money to be an analyst.
And by the way, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No, by the way.
Their offensive line against this pass rush, let's just get to that. The X's and O's, they're going to have a hard time protecting Aaron Rodgers, who's going to throw the ball in 1.2 seconds like he's facing 5 Miles Garrett. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter. I mean, to me, it's a little bit of a nightmare, you know, for Aaron Rodgers. And it could be reminiscent of the Browns game where it's like you can tell you're looking at him and you're like, he's just trying to get that ball out as fast as he possibly can, you know, to keep himself upright. And look, the Texans, I think they're on a 9-0 run, you know, to close the season. The defense is playing hellacious football. They look like a giant killer to me, because when you look at the 9-0 run, they've beaten Justin Herbert. They've beaten, I think, Josh Allen. I think they've beaten Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, and Trevor Lawrence. They beat all three of those quarterbacks. This is not the defense you want to be, you know, facing right now. And the thing about the Steelers, too, when I watched the end of that game against the Baltimore Ravens, this is not science here, but I've covered the league long enough to see this. Sometimes you see teams that they get into the playoffs in an absolutely miraculous way, and then you're in the locker room and you're like, do they just feel relieved? Like, is there just an element of, like, relief that they know they that this was over, they lost it, they were not going to the playoffs, and something flipped for them at the last moment in the fourth quarter, and next thing you know, they're entering the playoffs, and it's not with this forceful momentum of we dominated a game, we went in here, we took care of business. A kicker missed, and that was the difference ultimately, you know, for this. I'm very curious. Like, I sat there and I thought, who's coming into this with more momentum? And I said, you could say it's a coin flip because of the, you know, the emotion that was released at the end of the game between the Steelers and the Ravens, or you could look at the Texans and just say, hey, we feel like we're dominating down the stretch. We're ready to put this all together. I would tend to believe it really leans more toward fundamentally the Texans in this game, because I just can't see winning a game like that and seeing how those guys were reacting to it and not feel like the Steelers are, maybe they don't consider themselves lucky, but I do think there was a sense of real relief to actually win that game and end up in the playoffs.
And to your point, Andrew, Pittsburgh since 2017, 0-6 straight up, Also 0-6 against the spread. So they have not covered a spread in any of those playoff games. This opened the Texans a 3.5-point road favorite. It is down to 3. Sharps did take the plus 3.5. It is also the lowest total on the board, as you would expect, 39.5. That is down, though, to 38.5. So also some money there. Steelers this season, 7-1-1 in the first half to the under at home. Texans 7-1 to the first half under on the road. First half total is very low, only 19.5 points, but one potential angle there. I think to C-Rob's point as well, the Steelers just have a lower ceiling. They are the second lowest power rated team in the playoffs, just ahead of the Panthers. And when I asked one odds maker, they only had the Steelers 2 points on a neutral field over the Panthers. So whatever we think of the Panthers, they'd only have the Steelers -2 in a game on a neutral field against them. Ultimately, the Texans defense is that good. It will also be a question of, can the Steelers get those run after catch opportunities, right? Because Houston's offense, the Steelers offense, Aaron Rodgers gets that ball out so quick. They're number one in pressure rate allowed because the ball is always out so quickly, right? So not giving up as many sacks. But when they are pressured, Aaron Rodgers and that offense is 30th in EPA per play, right? So if they can get pressure, the offense, things don't go well. Aaron Rodgers throws so many of those quick passes, screens, quick game. Do they have enough of that? Can they generate enough offense to stay in it? And for the Texans, they really can't run the ball. I think they're 29th or 30th in a lot of metrics. Is that too much pressure on CJ Stroud throwing the ball? They really, yeah, right? They haven't developed those necessarily number two, number three receivers as well. It is a lot on Nico Collins. So if somehow they can't get the ball to him as much, does that Texans offense stall enough that the Steelers hang around in this game, kind of like the Ravens get another game that they've done so many times this season, kind of hang around against a team that we think is better than them and either win at the end or potentially cover the spread? So I think it'll be a low scoring, close game. It's a game that the Texans should win, but ultimately, will they? I guess weird things we've seen happen in Pittsburgh. They seem to keep happening this season for the Steelers, and they've also thrived off of turnovers. Can they get enough of those against the Texans?
Yeah, it's a fascinating game just with the storylines, much like last week on Sunday night was the same. And we ended that one with 48 hours later, John Harbaugh. John Harbaugh out in Baltimore. And then, look, I'm not rooting for Mike Tomlin to exit stage left. Quite the contrary, like, let him coach as long as he wants. It'll be interesting to see how this one shakes out. All right, we have time for one more thing before we go. Let's do it fast because we're short on time here. Roll it! C-Rob, while you were gone, we got a house band and animation. You go first.
Yeah, that's, I'm like, this is new. We got graphics. We got money for graphics. Hope that came out of Frank's pockets. All right, here we go. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about the Raiders and, you know, John Spytek talks this week and they're obviously out on the hunt for a coach. And there's all this talk about, you know, finding the right person to pair with whatever quarterback they take with the number one overall pick. Does Dante Moore enter the draft? And, you know, I know this, but I pull it up every year because it ends up being such an unmitigated disaster with quarterbacks who get chosen number one overall. You go back to 2015. 9 of 11 number one picks were quarterbacks. This is how that went. Cam Ward, Brian Callahan, fired. Obviously a massive, just a completely underwhelming pairing. Caleb Williams, Matt Eberflus, fired. Bryce Young, Frank Reich, fired. By the way, most of these coaches aren't lasting more than a season. Some of them are being fired in less than one season. Trevor Lawrence, Urban Meyer, fired. Joe Burrow, Zach Taylor, to his credit, he survived this offseason, so he's still there with Joe Burrow, that pairing. Kyler Murray, Cliff Kingsbury lasted a couple seasons, ultimately fired. Baker Mayfield, Hugh Jackson, fired. Jeff Fisher, Jared Goff, Fisher, fired. Jameis Winston, Lovie Smith, fired. That's going back to 2015. If you are a coach of the number one pick quarterback, good luck, man, because it is tough sledding. And Zach Wilson, let's be honest, Zach would have been fired this offseason, I think. It was very, very easy. He could have been fired. And obviously that didn't happen, but it's good luck to the Raiders and their next quarterback, number one quarterback head coach.
if Mike Tomlin somehow decides to do something else with his life or there's a change there, what if I told you that Zach Taylor would be the only coach to make it through the AFC North offseason?
Crazy.
Mind blown. All right, yeah. Ben, what do you got?
So I would say there's a lot of different contests you can do during the NFL season. One of them is Survivor, which is basically you pick one NFL team each week to win. You can't repeat that team. It is a tough contest. You got to, as the kids say, you got to have your mentals right, right? If you have this one guy who I was able to speak with, he basically had last year in Circa Sports, they have the biggest Survivor contest. They had, he was in, what do you go, 19-1, right? So he made it all the way to the last week. He picked the Falcons. They lost in overtime to the Panthers. I think they might have even changed the overtime rule. They didn't get the ball. He comes back this year, makes it all the way again to the end. It's $1,000 per entry. So he has a chance, basically. He's one of six. He has a chance at $18 million. Potentially his entry is worth $3 million. He picks the Bengals. They have that just, I don't know how they lost that game. Somehow they did. Andrew, you were there, to the Browns. They end up kicking the field goal. He couldn't have been more gracious. I talked to him for a story I did for Yahoo Sports this week. He did happen to win another pool where he won $1 million. So I think that lessened some of the blow. And he did hedge on the Browns. So he won six figures, not seven. But he had a very zen, you know, he had done the decision making. He was good. And then it was out of his hands. And I said, more power to you, because I would be sweating that game a lot more than that.
Wow. So as we say, when number 25 lines up to hit a field goal, and he's hit a couple of game winners after missing, obviously, the kick game one against the Bengals. Schmidt happens. Andre Schmidt happens.
No. Indeed.
And
no way. Some furniture would be moving in my house that day. Yeah. Yes. Definitely some furniture would be moving around.
Which is actually perfect for my one more thing. Here it is. So Drake May and Bryce Young and Caleb Williams make their playoff debuts this weekend. Just so you know, the bar is pretty high for most passing yardage from a quarterback in his NFL playoff debut. The bar is 429 by Kelly Holcomb in the 0-2 playoffs where the Browns went to Heinz Field. They had the Steelers beaten, but as legend has it, Butch Davis told the late Foj Fazio, the defensive coordinator, to, you know, drop seven or drop eight and go full prevent. And Tommy Maddox marched the Steelers up and down the field in the second half. And it came down to Dennis Northcutt dropping a third down pass late in the game that could have ended it, but he dropped the pass. Kelly Holcomb, 429 is the bar. And when they say that games can scar you, they can scar you mentally. I just want to show you that that game actually scarred me. I don't know that you could see it here, but I punched the door in my apartment in West LA and I cut my hand. It bled. I didn't get stitches. I probably should have. That game quite literally left a scar. So there's that. Playoffs matter, friends. Enjoy Wild Card Weekend. Playoffs mean more. Seriously, enjoy it. It's awesome. My back hurts. I'm going to be on the couch all weekend. It's going to be maybe not a dry January, but a dry weekend. Just me and a heat pad, and it's going to be glorious. Amazing. See you, Rob, Ben, enjoy your playoff weekend. This is Inside Coverage. We are back on Monday. So long, everybody. We'll be right back.